Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Julius Schwartz, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America. Judith, before we get into the topic and before I properly introduce you, today will be the easiest day to be a standout on the radio this year. Do you know how that is?
I have no idea.
We will be the only place, the only program not talking about the debate.
Okay, well.
That will make us
That
unique.
Makes sense, and I promise not to talk about the debate.
Judith Schwartz joining us from Vermont. She is coming back to the program because I think it's time way overdue. Judith is a freelance writer. She has authored two books. Cows is exactly how I should look this up. I just do this from memory. Cows Save the Planet. Is that correct?
Right. And then it's a book. Cows Save the Planet and Other Improbable Ways of Restoring Soil to Heal the Earth.
And then the newest book, Water in Plain Sight. But there's a second part of that one, too.
Yep. Hope for a Thirsty World.
Have you heard of short, catchy titles? I just like Cows Save the Planet. We'll run with that one. How have you been, anyway?
I'm sorry?
How have you been?
I have been really, really well, and as you can imagine, rather busy. Because writing a book, well, you know, it's not something you do in your leisure time.
Actually, I want to ask you that question, and I don't know how relevant it is to the audience, but you can't write a book overnight. But
true.
The time spent writing the book is significantly less than marketing the book, or at least letting people know it's out there. True?
Yeah, that is kind of true. Yeah, so you shift into a different mode. And, I mean, it's interesting because when you're writing the book, you only have to deal with yourself, which comes with its own challenges. Mm-hmm. But when you're marketing the book, you have to deal with the rest of the world. And that has a whole different, and things you have no control over. And that is a whole other set of challenges. So it's just a shifting of gears.
Remind me, what year did you write Cows Save the Planet?
It came out in 2013.
Okay.
And, right, so I was writing it for 2011, 2012. And then, so that book is a look at soil as a hub for our many environmental, economic, and social crises, and for solutions. Basically, when you look at all of our challenges from the standpoint of the soil, you know, when you take a soil's eye view of the world, everything shifts and solutions become more possible. So, after I finished that book, it was very, very clear to me that I was not done with this material. And there was a chapter in the book about water, and that stuck with me. And one thing that, if I can say, this kind of drove me crazy in that year after the book came out is that there's a lot of talk about droughts, particularly the drought in California. Mm-hmm. But when I say what drove me crazy was that what never came up in conversations was land. So when they would talk about drought, it was always about what falls or doesn't fall from the sky. So after having just written a book about soil and understanding that we really can't talk about water unless we talk about land as well, I felt really compelled to make that point and to really explore that through stories, which is what I do in my books. So to tell the stories about water and land and how people are able to find water security and improve the water cycle in their land and their homes when I address urban areas by considering the needs of the land. And clearly that goes back to the soil, because when we think about water infrastructure, we think about dams and pipes and reservoirs, but the ultimate water infrastructure is the soil.
I think I can speak on behalf of the farm food producing community when I say, you said that there was one component that drove you crazy. The one component of today's discussion, particularly from a political standpoint, that drives food producers crazy is that, and I think you just summarized it, we want to manage carbon dioxide by itself. We want to limit carbon. The earth is a system. It's a whole systems approach, and you cannot go manage carbon dioxide without managing the soil. And that's what drives us absolutely mad, is that we want to just bring out one area of the world or the atmosphere and try to fix it. You can't do that. It has to be the whole system.
Exactly. And that is a huge, huge, huge theme in my work. And what's really exciting is that I've been able to talk about this in my radio interviews and in and other kinds of interviews. And I don't know if you know this, but one opportunity I had to really, really delve into the whole system that we're dealing with as food producers, as consumers, as, you know, the beings that we are, was in Congress. Did you know that? That I testified
no,
in
I
Congress.
No, I did not.
Okay. Well, this is actually fairly exciting. Mm-hmm. And, so a congresswoman from Wyoming, Cynthia Lummis, is with the Governance and Reform Committee, and she convened a discussion on 21st century conservation practices. So she observed that, or concluded, that our public lands, regulations for our public lands, have not been revisited in decades, and that that our understanding of how to make our, you know, how to have our landscapes flourish has developed in that time, and what we're doing on our public lands isn't necessarily working. So she convened a hearing where this was discussed, and it was a wonderful opportunity because, unlike many congressional hearings, it's not for this legislation, against this legislation, but rather what is possible. So I was able to talk about how animals and, you know, how animals work on the land, you know, animal land dynamics, and how this relates to water. And also, you mentioned carbon dioxide. I was able to express how I like to understand climate change, because you mentioned that everyone's obsessed about CO2 in general.
Right.
That I agree with you that leaves us stuck. When people talk about climate change, the phrase tends to be code for global warming from too much CO2 in the atmosphere from fossil fuels.
Spot on.
That leaves us... I'm sorry?
No, I was saying spot on. That's the frustration.
Yeah, right. So that leaves us stuck, because what do we do? We're stuck. We can't even if we totally stopped putting CO2 in the atmosphere, like, tomorrow, we're still going to face so many of the problems that we have, because those problems are related to degraded land. So what I suggested was that we understand climate change as manifestations of distorted carbon, water, and energy cycles, because once, and that's a working definition, once we look at it that way, then there's so much that we can do. And once we start working on the level of the carbon cycle, well, then the water cycle improves, and then the energy and cycle comes back into balance. And what was so rewarding about that is that there was a congresswoman from Michigan there who's an urban person, and she even said in the discussion, she said, oh, this is new to me, I'm a city girl. When I offered that alternative definition, she said, for the record, I agree with you. Mm. So it's there in the public record now. So that's pretty exciting to be able to contribute to these discussions.
And with that, Judith, I have to say that we've reached our first breaking point. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Judith Swartz, freelance author, after this.
For the record, there are options when it comes to marketing cattle the superior way. You can do it via the video, or you can do it on the country page. This week, we've had a ton of cattle that have been posted and sold on the country page from Sanborn, Minnesota. 46 heifer calves, they sold already. Onega, Kansas, there's a split load posted yesterday. They're still available for sale. Ruby Valley, Nevada. Here's 90 heifer calves. They weigh 510 pounds. They're a long ways from selling. White River, South Dakota, those cattle are still available. Buffalo, South Dakota, LaBarge, Wyoming, and just about all of these cattle that I've been talking about are delivery late October, early November. Here's Baker, Montana. Baker, Montana, another load. Belt, Montana, with a ton of genetic propensity behind them. Get the details about the cattle and see what you can actually learn. The best part about learning, visit with your rep. Your rep, and you can sit down and decide what's best for your cattle operation. www.superiorlivestock.com.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce alongside Judith D. Swartz. Her father was in the Air Force, I've just learned. Thank you for being a military family. We often forget that it's a sacrifice of the entire family, Judith, not just the individual serving. So I wear a red shirt every Friday for your family. Thank you for being a part of that. Freelance writer coming to us from Vermont. I have to ask you, your first book, Cow Save the Planet, what sent you down this path to look at soil and overall climate health?
Well, it does sound like kind of an unlikely path for someone who used to write for women's magazines about relationships, but stranger things do happen. So I was writing about economics. I was writing about new economics, which is basically the notion that the economy should serve people and the planet as opposed to the other way around, mm-hmm. which I fear sometimes it has become. So I was exploring how money flows. I was looking at alternative currencies and all kinds of things. And actually, it is relevant to this show because I think that in rural areas, wealth, the way our economy is structured, wealth tends to flow away from rural areas and into the money centers. And it became clear very early on, living in a small town in Vermont, that every local purchase matters. So I think that kind of primed my interest in very localized things. But what sparked the actual book on soil was that I went to a conference and someone made a statement that wouldn't let me go. And that was that over time, more CO2 has gone into the atmosphere from the soil compared to the burning of fossil fuels. And that hit me over the head because, you know, I read magazines and newspapers, and I thought that I was up on what our problems were and why, and I thought it was all about fossil fuels. So if soil is involved here, that actually sounds kind of important. So let me just learn a little bit more about that. And I did, and as I explored, I came to understand soil from this other perspective, from how it relates to so many of our challenges, and came to understand that soil is mostly carbon, organic matter is mostly carbon, and that when you build carbon in the soil, not only can you replace the carbon that has been lost and therefore, you know, kind of bring that cycle back into balance, but also you're holding that much more water. And when you're holding more water, that supports plant growth and microorganisms and the whole system, the whole web of life that exists under our feet. And that supports biodiversity. And so so many of our concerns just kind of begin to start moving in the right direction. So that was very exciting to me. And so I began to explore how this actually functions. And the first place I was looking for who was out there working on bringing carbon back into the soil. And that brought me to holistic plant grazing, and hence the title of the book, Cows Save the Planet.
Right. And from a public relations standpoint, if we just talked about the cow, because that's part of the equation of what I was talking about earlier, is the cow and human lives are all part mm-hmm. of the life cycle. And now somebody mm-hmm. wants to demonize the cow as a problem. Well, the cow's no more of a problem than somebody living in Manhattan, New York. Everybody is a part of the life cycle, and you learn to do what you do to make the life better.
Right, right. What I often say when people are saying cows are bad is that it's kind of cheap of us to blame animals for our failure to manage them appropriately.
Mm-hmm. I think management is the key always. But I think we've fallen into this era where people just think the cows are a problem, period. And cows are not a problem. They're part of the life cycle. And obviously we can manage them better, but the numbers speak to themselves in my mind. I have some new numbers that I did not have the last time you were here, which was, probably 3 years ago, huh?
Mm-hmm.
In 1900, it required 5 acres of land to produce enough food to feed one person for a year. In 2016, it will take less than one-third of an acre to produce enough food to feed one person for a year. And that can only be arrived at if you understand the basic principles of soil health and all. And by the way, I think we've only skimmed the surface on what we can accomplish with that efficiency. But that efficiency, to me, is an indication of how every year, every generation, we learn how to be better with soil health and a management of the resources. Does that make sense to you?
It certainly does, and I'm actually really, I mean, those are very striking figures.
It's huge.
Yeah. Yes.
Your concern yes. is?
Oh, I guess just is that, you know, the degree to which inputs are a part of that figure. Because, synthetic nitrogen changes mm-hmm. the dynamics, and of course, different herbicides and pesticides. Yeah, I'm very concerned about pollinators right now.
In particular, bees?
Yeah, bees and butterflies. I mean, in truth, I see fewer. This summer, I have seen fewer butterflies than I usually do, and that just makes me concerned.
Are you talking monarch butterflies?
Monarchs and just in general. I'm just sensing, fewer bees and even fewer yellow jackets. It's just an observation, and just that's just in my little corner, and mm-hmm. I can't speak for other places.
Well, we've spent a lot of time, we being the resource-providing communities, talking about the monarch butterfly and talking about Iowa has been a leader in putting in place some practices to create better habitat for the monarch butterfly on farms.
Mm-hmm.
But what's perplexing about that to me, excuse me, is that 75% of the loss of the monarch butterfly has been attributed to where they winter in Mexico. And we continue to try to do things here. And in fact, this year there was a big story about a huge death loss in Mexico earlier in the year. And we continue to put restrictions on land and use of land here when the real problem is in Mexico.
Wow, that is interesting and distressing, and I can check with my Mexican colleagues, but for this new book, I actually did do a trip to Mexico mm-hmm. that was all about biodiversity, and I can share that with you.
I would love for you to do that, but I don't want you to start right now because we're 1 minute away from me saying it's breaking time again.
Okay.
But we'll do that when we come back from breaking time. Just give it, we kind of have a sense of the soil health in 1 minute nutshell. water in plain sight. How do you describe that to people? If you're sitting on an airplane and you want them to read it, what's the one-minute pitch you give them?
Okay, well, that the book is a look at how water intersects with climate, biodiversity, and food security and peace and conflict, and how understanding how water moves, through our landscapes, across our landscapes and through the atmosphere will help us address many of our challenges.
Are we?
And it is told through stories.
Mm. You cannot educate people if you don't talk through stories. That's the bottom line.
Yes, and, absolutely.
And a good.
And I was lucky to find some fabulous stories from around the world.
We will. We would ask you to share some of those stories when we come back. Judith D. Swartz, our guest. She's a freelance writer, has authored two books. The short titles are Cows Save the Planet and Water in Plain Sight. On the Great Plains of America, I think, is what she's talking about. We'll find out when we return with more Rural Route after this.
The nonprofit endeavor that I want to remind you of and encourage you to be a part of, even if it's simply contributing, is the All-American Beef Battalion. Men and women around this country continue to risk everything to protect our freedom, and all we want to do is say thank you. We say thank you with that very substance that enables a healthy planet. It's called beef. A one-pound ribeye, cheesy potatoes, corn, a dinner roll, a dessert. To the tune of 350,000 individuals in the past 8 years, only made possible with your kind donation. 100% of the proceeds goes to the endeavor. $0 spent on administration. We all feel good about that. We feel great about that because the money goes to helping say thank you. Help say thank you by going to steaksfortroops.com. Make your contribution today.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce. Planet health, that's the theme of today's program. Managing the whole ecosystem instead of thinking you can single out and demonizing one particular part of that. Judith Swartz, our guest, coming to us from Vermont. Although when I went to Vermont after our last endeavor, Judith didn't take the time to come see me. I still harboring that little resentment, Judith.
Ah, goodness.
Get over it, Trent. Is that what you just said? You just come see us in the Great Plains. Come for a visit to Nebraska. Weren't you born in Nebraska?
Yes, I was. Yes, my father was a medic in the Air Force at the SAC Air Force Base.
Hmm. Have you been to the SAC Air Force Museum?
No, I have not been back to. I've been back to Omaha just passing through, but no, I haven't lingered. But perhaps it's time that I do.
Well, no, I don't want to go there. But you know, life is cyclical. So
that's right.
You have to come back to where you started at some point.
I think that's a good point.
Yeah. Okay, water in plain sight. You have stories related to water. Do tell.
Yes. Okay. So, one of the places that I went in reporting this book was to Chihuahua, Mexico, the Chihuahuan Desert in Mexico. And the way that this happened is this. So I published Cows Save the Planet, and a fellow reached out to me, and he said, I think you would be very interested in what we're doing down here, and you should come and visit. And I thought, and this was it from Mexico, and I thought,
sure.
Okay, that sounds kind of interesting. Do tell. So what it turns out, okay, so fast forward a few months, and I, with my husband, who is a fabulous photographer, fly down to El Paso, cross over into the desert with a lovely rancher named Alejandro Carrillo. And what they're doing down there is that a group of ranchers who manage holistically are working with bird conservation organizations to create and restore habitat for endangered migratory grassland birds. And what's so interesting is that these are groups of people that you would never think would be working together. But the bird people realize that populations are declining of many of these iconic song birds. I think they're songbirds. They're migratory. And they, so for a long time, they were focusing on the habitat, the summer habitat in the U.S., often in the Great Plains.
Right.
So, but still they were losing numbers, and they realized that the biggest problem was in Mexico, where they spend 7 months out of the year. Specifically, the grasslands. These were grassland birds, and the grasslands were disappearing. And that's occurring for several reasons. One was poor grazing practices. So a lot of the land that had been healthy rangeland was deteriorating. And this is actually happening quite rapidly. Another factor is that Mennonite farmers are applying intensive agricultural practices, like, you know, very heavily chemical laden farming. So you think Mennonites in Mexico?
That was my first thought.
Sure. In the state of Chihuahua, there are about 100,000 Mennonites that have come originally from Europe, many of them via Canada, because there's a lot of land down there, mm-hmm. and that land is cheap, relatively speaking. So here's the challenge. Here's what happened, is that you have a group of people who are bringing practices from one kind of system, which is basically Europe. Okay, so they're growing cabbages, or, you know, they're growing these kind of Northern European crops, bringing that to a completely different environment. And in order to make that work, they need a lot of chemicals. So they're plowing up these grasslands of, you know, like real deep, rich soil that had been built over the millennia from, you know, from bison and antelope, you know, from just the way that grassland systems are created in tandem with grazing animals. So they're plowing it up, and as my rancher friend said, that it's become like a biological desert there, and it's very distressing because the chemicals actually, there's one instance where one of the ranchers lost 80 cows in one night because there was a leakage of the chemicals from the farmers that are very close by to the water source. So, of course, he's changed the water source. But, yeah, no, that gives you an indication of just the toxicity of what they're using. So,
I want to explain that because that is strikes me very strange. The whatever chemical they're applying got into their water supply. Cows were drinking that water and then caused the toxicity?
Apparently, yes. Yeah, the rancher brought to Mexico City, I don't know if it, remember if it was the soil from that area or the water itself, and there was a significant percentage of a particular chemical. And it's a chemical that's actually banned in the U.S.,
uh-huh.
but apparently it's available in
right.
Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, on the positive side here is that the bird conservation organizations found that the ranches where these ranchers are managing holistically, that they were islands of grass and a kind of haven for the birds. So they go down there, and the birds that they're looking for are finding a place to be because the birds need the food from the grasses, the seeds, and the hide from predators and all of that. So their goal is to work together to expand the area where land is managed this way and therefore managed well for the bird populations. And when I was there, there was an extraordinary biodiversity in on some of these ranches, and that was really lovely to see.
So, without knowing where you were going with water in plain sight, what you just told me the same story that I had mentioned earlier about the monarch butterfly.
Yep, absolutely. That's why it occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that when that when we're looking at migratory species, you need to look at their whole life cycle. And again, that really brings home the point that we are all part of the same system.
Yeah, and that, just to echo that, is our frustration, is that we take a better care of the environment here from a land management standpoint than ever before. I'm not saying there's not room for improvement, but we're doing a fantastic job. And then it just takes one little situation like that with a neighbor to the south, and it all goes for naught.
This is true. This is a frustration. What does make me optimistic is just how quickly systems can rebound. So these ranchers in Mexico, they made extraordinary strides a couple of them have been doing this for 30 years, but Alejandro, who had been in the IT field, and then his father took over the ranch that his father had run for many years or owned. I don't know whether it was actively being managed.
Right.
And then Alejandro decided, okay, this is family land. This is beautiful land. This is what I want to do with my life. And so he started managing it. And within the first year, and certainly the first two, I mean, the improvements were so extraordinary. And what he said is that this desert ecosystem is very fragile, but when you work with it and do the right thing, it rebounds tremendously. So that's what's worth remembering, is how quickly, when we work with nature responds.
And Judith, you know as well as I do, and that's why you went to Mexico, when you see things with your own eyes, the light bulb comes on. And every Monday for 13 years, I've had Hank Vogler join me from White Pine County, Nevada. It's the high desert. It's a very arid climate. And my first trip to Hank's place, just 50 miles east of Ely, he took me to, he's primarily on government land, federal land, but he took me to a section that he personally had owned. It was deeded property. And he started cutting the pinyon and juniper trees that were just growing unchecked, unmanaged, just running away with the thing. And after very short period of time, like 6 months, after he had gone in there and eliminated the majority of the pinyon and junipers that didn't have a purpose, springs started just coming up in places where he previously thought there was no water. And it just always comes back to proper management of the environment.
Absolutely. And one thing, when I'm talking to audiences who don't necessarily work the land and I'm explaining it to them, I talk about how it's worth inquiring of a particular place, what does nature want to do here? So when we're dealing with, for a challenge, for example, of wildfires, one might ask, how did nature keep this land hydrated? How was the fire fuel managed? And in many cases, the fuel was, you know, decaying, dying plants were consumed by animals, so that it didn't accumulate and be prone to burn.
And today's world, we want to remove the consumer of fuel, i.e. the animal. Judith Swart, she lives in Vermont. She gets it. She's sharing it with us. We'll be back with the final segment of Rural Route after this.
Now, let's once again talk about marketing cattle the superior way. And if we go to the website and see what the future looks like, there's a video sale every other week. This happens to be an off week. But if you go to the website, you can get the full rundown on the schedule. The next scheduled video auction is October the 7th. We're talking about October now. And then October 21st, November 4th, November 17th, November 18th. Oh, on the 17th, that's the Superior Select female auction. So with the current situation, maybe it'll be a good time to add some high-quality known genetics to your herd. the place to go, www.superiorlivestock.com. Find your rep and let's talk about marketing cattle the superior way.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce. Judith Schwartz joining us from an undisclosed location in Vermont. I just like saying that for everybody, Judith.
Okay.
And proving my point at the beginning of the program, we have not fact-checked one single person in the presidential debate, and we're not going to. We are fact-checking the world on proper environmental health, though. You said something there I want to follow up on. You don't come at this approach. I'm sixth-generation United States farmer slash rancher. So people expect me to want to talk about, you know, proper health and the benefit of cows and animals grazing and removing the fuels. You don't have that baggage, I'll call it. You came into this because your investigative path led you this way. And you said when I talk to people from a more urban environment, number one, how often, I'm assuming frequently, like every day, you get the opportunity to do that. And number two, does the light bulb come on and they understand the environmental management aspect after you visit with them?
Yes, it happens all the time. And yes, often the light bulb does come on, and that's very exciting. And that's one thing that motivates me. And, so in many ways, right, one might say that I'm the wrong person to be taking on these concerns because they're not second nature to me. But then in another way, I'm a very appropriate person because I can serve as a kind of bridge between the people who are doing the work and who I respect tremendously and who I consider my teachers and people who, like me, grew up in cities and suburbs and largely disconnected from nature. I didn't grow up disconnected from nature because there was a lot of wildness near where I grew up in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't oriented that way. So when I was growing up, it was a sense that nature was here, you know, in one place, and then human life was somewhere else. Do you know what I'm saying? That it was separated.
Right.
And I really do feel that so many of our challenges right now have become entrenched because many of our decision makers are disconnected from natural processes. And, I think that is something that we need to be mindful of. And I really encourage people to be curious. And one very important bridge between the urban and rural and for people to understand natural processes has been the food movement. So a lot of people are become more curious about how food is grown, why does some food taste better than other food, and I really do think that the farmers market and people opening up their, you know, selling meat out of their freezer. Those kinds of interactions between producer and consumer can be very powerful. I think people learn a lot that way.
From an education standpoint, it's absolutely fantastic. I'm not a zealot for local food. I think it's a wonderful choice, but it's poor food policy. But from a standpoint of bridging that gap between a food producer and a food consumer, it's the best thing going.
Yeah, I think so. And I guess that also probably does, its value probably changes depending on where you are. I mean, like in Vermont, we're kind of built for that. Everything's small. Actually, we're built from that. We have 251 towns in our little state, and I would say that all of those towns developed as kind of food sheds, and so it's very easy for us to kind of go back to that model, or at least dip into that model a little bit. But I'm sure that where you are, it's a very different scenario.
There are three towns in my community and a total of 2,800 people. I'm sorry, my county. And there are 2,800 people in Sherman County.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a little different than Vermont.
Yes.
I want to get back to water in plain sight. Is there another story from that that you think would be really pique people's interest?
Well, I have a few. Okay, one quick one is that I visited a couple living in the desert. We're still in the Chihuahuan Desert, but we're crossing over into Texas. And this couple get all of their water from dew, from condensation.
Oh my goodness!
And just what was so exciting about that is just how thinking creatively we can address challenges such as water shortages. So when I went down there, everyone that I met was talking about how they don't have enough water, but this couple, they designed the barn so that it's the heat hits the top of the roof, and then there's a space between kind of two sections of the roof, and then as the air cools in the evening, then you get the breezes and the differential of the surfaces, the temperature of the surfaces, allows for the formation of condensation. And they did not know how much water they were getting solely from condensation until the day about 3 or 4 months after the most recent rain when the water tank overflowed. So that was...
You just made me think of something. Since you and I visited, I've made a lot of trips to Australia.
Ah.
And the biggest one difference between Australia, even the farm communities and our farm communities and families, every place, every family I stayed with in Australia, they capture their rainwater from the roof and run it into a cistern, exactly like the house that I grew up in and my grandparents have been in the family since 1870, and we've moved away from that.
Yeah. In our culture, convenience has become the priority, and there are costs to convenience, and one of the costs is not making the best use of the resource or missing opportunities that way, and also tremendous waste. So we think about Los Angeles, Southern California is a very dry area, but even in the lowest rainfall years, several thousand gallons of water per person is lost to the system. When I say lost to the system, it just rushes down the streets into the sewer system and ultimately out into the ocean. So there are actually really great advances happening in that area, and Los Angeles in particular is doing a great job with starting to capture more of that water. But that's absolutely true. Well, I'm really interested in Australia. I have a whole chapter on Australia in this book, Water in Plain Sight, and I talked to an incredible wise fellow who manages a tract of land that is the size equivalent of the five boroughs of New York City. And he's quite an extraordinary fellow in that he manages the land he manages livestock, not for their meat, not for the products, but to improve the land.
Which state is he in?
He's in Western Australia. Mm-hmm. And one cannot get to his property except by air, because during the rainy season, all the roads would wash out.
Right.
So he decided that air miles were less costly than road kilometers. And when I say he's wise, this is someone who's given a lot of thought. His name is Chris Hengler. he's given a lot of thought to how we humans are making just our interaction with the land. And he said that he made a decision to live there because work to improve the land. He says that we are not using. He wants to build the resource, build the value, the inherent value of the land in terms of its health, its ability to hold water, and its fertility, and its resilience amid fire. That's a huge thing there.
Sure.
Because he said that he could raise his children to be more competitive in kind of contending for diminishing resources, or he could work to build the resource and pass that along to his children. So he says that we have been very poor environmental capitalists because we have been depleting the natural capital.
Judith, we have 1 minute. We've not told people how to get the books and anything else that you would like to share with our listeners.
Okay, well, both. Okay, so they're from two different publishers. Cow Save the Planet is from Chelsea Green Publishing, and Water in Plain Sight is from St. Martin's Press. But they are certainly available either directly from the publisher, from your favorite online store, or your local store. That's always a fabulous way to order books. And also to ask your library to carry them. And I'm really thrilled that these two books have provided opportunities for people to have discussions about how to solve our problems as opposed to pointing up how bad our problems may be, but because that has been my goal, the title says it, because I believe that solutions are in plain sight if we open our eyes and ask the right questions
and Judith,
talk to each other.
Judith Swartz just planted a seed from my column, which I'm going to write immediately after we get off of the air, which is due today. And that column is going to be, most people go visit nature on their holidays, speaking as though I'm from Australia, as opposed to vacation. When those of us on farms and ranches live with nature every day, that is the one biggest difference. Thank you, Judith. It's been too long. We're going to get you back sooner because I don't think we'd only skimmed the surface of what's going on with our management of the ecosystem.
Okay, well, that would be my pleasure. Thank you so much, Trent.
The pleasure is all mine, and we have successfully journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. Both Judith and myself remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route.